Welcome to the Holistic Wealth Podcast. I'm your host, Keisha Blair, wife, mother of three, author of Holistic Wealth, and founder of the Institute on Holistic Wealth. The show will showcase various experts in the key pillars of holistic wealth. Each week, we deliver the best information on how to become holistically wealthy and live your best life. Today, I have a very, very special guest with me. I have Patricia Gadget, and she is an accomplished international contemporary artist, an award-winning author. She is president of the Patricia Gadget Art Enterprise. Patricia, you've had so many accolades. I'm just going to give the audience just kind of like a quick roundup before we get started. I'll just give the audience just a few to get a sense of your accomplishments. So in 2013, Patricia was knighted as a dame of the International Order of St. George, Grand Prior of Canada. She was a member of the Ontario Cabinet of Friends of the Canadian Museum for Human Rights and is a member of the Board of Directors of the Sir Edmund Hillary Foundation and the Devon Academy. Patricia, welcome to the show. We're so happy to have you here. And I just wanted to mention to the audience as well that you are the co-founder and advisor of Help Heal Humanity, which is a registered not-for-profit supporting education in Haiti and Kenya, which is one of your big nonprofit projects that you have going. So Patricia, welcome again.
Wow, thank you so much, Keisha. I am really, really excited to be here and having this conversation with you.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you're here. So I just wanted to start out right at the beginning of your career, Patricia, when you started out in finance. I want to hear a bit about that journey for you and then how you pivoted after that.
Absolutely. I always, always believed that everyone was an entrepreneur and that the only way you would ever learn the real ins and outs would be to actually work for businesses. So I had several jobs before I was 15. I had three jobs, including working at a Burger King. I worked for a bridal salon, taking gowns in and out of their plastic bags as brides-to-be would try them on. And then unfortunately, I did have a childhood high school sweetheart. And after all of those years and completing grade 13, he unfortunately passed. And so I really struggled with what am I going to do with the rest of my life? And I got a job at a bank as a teller. My parents were not in a financial position to support me in university. And I said, okay, I will just get the job and really dig my heels in. And I did. I fell in love with banking. I wanted to know every single job. And I did. I worked my way up right through to the ivory tower. And at the age of 25, you know, I became one of the first female bank managers in the Manitoba, Saskatchewan district for the Bank of Montreal. And I was really excited because throughout that whole process, I always loved to draw. I was very left side, right side. I had a lot of different interests. And so after spending many years working my way through the bank, I eventually made the decision that I wanted to scout out on my own with all of that experience. And I bought a building and converted it into a retirement home. And I was like, what am I doing? But I loved people and I loved thinking about ways to see the future, the silver-haired future, because this was back in the early 80s. And when I progressed through that, I also decided property management would be important. So I was fortunate to start my own company, CareLex Management Group and MLX Property Management, and managed several very large medical buildings and condominiums and apartment buildings. Really got my feet wet. So that was sort of the beginnings there.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting because I know for you how your career evolved was through dabbling in several different fields and then ultimately finding your purpose. And in my book, Holistic Wealth, intentional life purpose is one of the key basic modules. And so I just wanted to ask you, because there's so many people right now, even struggling with that during COVID-19, as many people lose their jobs and realize that they're multi-passionate. as I am, as you are, and they know they have a higher purpose and calling, and they're trying to figure out their life purpose. So I'm wondering, Patricia, how did you figure your way through all of the different career transitions to definitely land on something that you found your purpose and your calling in?
I think the most beautiful part of my life was that I came from a very spirit-filled family. My father was Catholic, and he really came from nothing. And he felt that by having community, and of course, we went to church every week, and I sang in the choir, I became really comfortable in my own skin. And many, many abstract things happened to me as I was growing up. And I had to fight some pretty significant measures of things that took place in my life that are not always easy for people to deal with. And yet I had this really high sense of energy, that all things are made up of energy, and that the conditions of our body and mind were incredibly valuable and unique, and opportunities that other people might think, you know, wow, this is just horrible. Or when I say opportunities, when I mean situations take place, I would always look at it through the lens of, this is a precious life and it is in front of me. I don't want to be attached to the suffering. I lost my father on my 25th birthday. I had lost Gary at the end of our high school years. I had a lot of tragedy take place in my life. I'll just add a few things here. You know, my brother-in-law was in an accident when he was 17 and became a quadriplegic, and we had to care for him. My mom, of course, having to live at the young age of 43, you know, without a husband and going through her own struggles and us trying to support her. We became, I think, aware that a big part of this survival in life is to look at yourself and in a way recycle and reduce and reuse the suffering. And I became really good at helping other people because I'd been through so much. I had so many bizarre things happen to me that are difficult. An example was I was on a horse on the Trans-Canada Highway. I was 23 years old. We were just taking a little stroll around the community. I was out in the farmlands of Rollo, and the horse got spooked and went onto the Trans-Canada Highway. And basically I was losing control, and I had to slide. Yeah, I had to slide off on the highway about 40 miles per hour. It was a part quarter horse, part Appaloosa. And I died. I literally died on the highway and rolled.
Oh my gosh, Patricia.
Yeah. And I laid there until they found my body. And I believe that only miracles are, you know, going to happen in life. Mm-hmm. But I came back to life, and that was a struggle all by itself. It was very hard to imagine the pain and suffering inside of that. But I felt if I'd been given this second chance to live in the world, then this isn't about me anymore. There's no more ego to play with and put me on top. I have to be here to serve humanity because we are actually one full consciousness. And it doesn't matter how many books you read or how many religions you tap into. I've studied, you know, the Kabbalah, the Zohar, the Tanya, Maimonides, the Judaic mystery teachings, the esoteric teachings. I studied and have been studying the foundation for the preservation of the Mahayana tradition of Buddhism. I've spent many years tackling, you know, the ins and outs of, you know, everything from Nietzsche to Jean-Paul Sartre to all of those great minds, to come to the conclusion that, you know, we are simply here, as Chardin says, it's a soul experience. It is your experience.
Yes.
And it's a clean slate, that every single day you have the opportunity to choose. You have the opportunity to, you know, I like to think about this and say, I don't want to be a lake. I want to be a river that just keeps flowing and flowing and, you know, can meander into all these different areas, so that I'm always in a constant state of discovery. And, you know, having the privilege of being taught by a master in France, which I have since 1999, I think that experience also provided me with the bandwidth to have the lens of experience, which incorporates being mindful, living within, you know, from moment to moment and in between those moments, to transfer, you know, the suffering that I experienced into actually happiness and an acceptance of who I am and what I'm doing. So I like to feel, Keisha, that our lives are about generating compassion. And when we can take every single thing that we do and not make it about ourselves, but think about what we're doing that could potentially help the person that we're either in the relationship with or our family members or someone we know who's going through a difficult moment. If we just took the time and said, let me just dwell in the present moment with you, just to generate a person feeling that you're with them, you're not going to experience what they are, but you can stand in the space with them.
Yeah.
And that, I think, makes a big difference. I like to think that we live, my values are about mystery, karma, humanity. And I think the key to all of that is using your wisdom to your advantage, the things that you learn, the things that you know. You know, I know people don't like the word pivot. That's become kind of like a super,
right,
super word of, you know,
yeah.
If we can pivot and focus, become more decisive and take the lens off of the suffering and sadness and convert it. Yeah, convert it.
When you mentioned your near-death experience. And I wanted to ask you about that because I can't let that slip me because I'm fascinated with these things. I just can't. So I'm just wondering, what was that like? Were you actually pronounced or was it just like out of consciousness? And then maybe in a few minutes or a few seconds, you were back to, do you know, or did anyone tell you what happened in those few seconds?
This is actually one of those moments where I had to make the decision. I'm on the highway, the horse is out of control, and there is a transport truck coming on the other side of the road at us, far enough away that I knew I would either be thrown or I would have no choice but to slide off. When I made the decision I was sliding off, it's almost as if I can hear my own mind saying all of the things over and over in my mind. I felt I'm committing suicide. I'm taking my own death because there was no way I could survive at that pace, hitting the cement highway at the height that I was at, because on the highway, you're looking at fields of wheat, mm-hmm. and the dip from the edge down is a good 10 feet. So I was so aware that this was going to be the end. And I said a prayer and I did ask for forgiveness first. I asked that if this was my time, that I would, you know, be looked after. And I had a sense of gratitude in a funny, weird way that I had experienced all the young things I had up until that point in time. And then when I slid off, there was nothing that happened after that for me. My head obviously banged hard. I broke my nose into the cement and I rolled off into the ditch. I was not conscious. And mm-hmm. it had to have been at least 20 plus minutes before they actually found, I think it was about 20 to 30 minutes before they found me. Mm-hmm. And it was only as, and again, it's, I'm going to call it this lightning bolt that cracked through my skull, how I felt. And it was, I was underwater. The feeling was that I was drowning, that I was under water. Mm-hmm. The pain in my head was very severe and I could not focus. I couldn't see anybody. My eyes were starting to open, but I was blind. I didn't see anything. And then my hearing came back and then my sight came back, mm-hmm. but I wasn't the same after that. I knew that for whatever reason, I broke my nose. I was very, very badly bruised, but I did not break another single bone in my body, nothing. Wow. And they took me to the hospital in Moose Jaw. They x-rayed me. I mean, back then, I mean, when I think about the hospital, I mean, it was just like a little building and that was it. I went home and I don't think I could begin to imagine what had just happened, because I knew, I mean, you can be unconscious and there has to be some sense of resolve, but this was really beyond exception. And so I, again, can't put, it's like one of those things that you can't really put words to something that is very, it's indescribable. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, I've never had your experience. But, you know, as you know, I've had experiences with tragedy, too, that changed my life.
Yes.
And it's funny because I did a talk with the Library of Toronto like 2 days ago. And one of the participants asked me about this line that I wrote in my viral article. And the line said something to the effect of, you know, striving for the highest paid position is futile or is pointless. Service to humanity is the highest calling. And I said that when I wrote that article, because I had the same epiphany as you did. And I came out of that tragedy when my husband died tragically of a rare disease when he was 34. I was just 31. And I came out of that experience feeling the same way, that this was not about ego anymore. Mm. This had to be about serving humanity. And, you know, they asked me to explain that statement. Why is striving for the highest paid position pointless? You know, and I answered it. But as I'm listening to you, it's become more evident again, you know, in your story and through other stories that our lives are for the greater good of humanity. I wanted to just ask you about your work with your foundation, Help Heal Humanity, and all of the type of work that you do in other countries. How did that get started? And what has that been like for you?
Oh my gosh, this is like my favorite thing to talk about. I always, even as a small child, if I was given an apple, I would try and find somebody to share it with. If I had candies, I would try and find somebody to give them to. It's almost like reverse dominoes. I would receive things that I had to give away, and I still do. This is like a crazy thing, but I've always believed in this sense of sharing. So from a really young age, I was 13. I was president of the CYO at the church, and I would have groups of people up to the ages of 18 that I would be organizing dances and things for. Then I became involved with, as I got older, with Junior Achievement and the United Way Board I sat on, Buck Elgar Choral. Then I was really involved with the Cancer Center and the Wellwood Resource, raising money and trying to help people. In 2006, I had this unbelievably fabulous friend who had written a book called Markawasi, The Stone Forest of Peru. And she was going to Thailand to have a meeting with the printers because it was much cheaper to have it done. It was going to be a coffee table book. And when she was there, I said, wow, if you get a chance, you need to go to Cambodia, because that Angkor Wat was always on my bucket list. And I never thought in a million years that I would ever get, you know, have the privilege to travel to, you know, faraway places. So when she arrived into Angkor Wat, there was a young monk that was sitting beside a sign that said, you know, school for poor children and orphanage. And this is like a really dilapidated building at the South Pagoda in Angkor. And so she said, do you speak English? And he said, yes. And she said, what is this cement pad on the ground? And he said, these are the footings, because Master Kawan, who is the gatekeeper of Angkor, his orphanage is going to be shut down because it's such an eyesore. UNESCO is coming in with money from Sweden, from Australia, and they're starting to work on the sandstone steps and the carvings inside of Angkor to bring more tourists and to raise the awareness. But they don't think that, you know, these buildings eventually should be torn down. And because that pagoda has been there for over 150 years, Master Kawan was devastated. Now, during the time of the Khmer Rouge, Pol Pot burned. It was a genocide. A million people were murdered and all the books were burned. What the monks did was they took all of the Buddhist teachings and the Cambodian folklore. They were written on wreaths and they were buried underground in under the stupas, like the cemetery stones. So for 25 years, as they were buried, you know, post the Khmer Rouge regime, Master Kawan felt that if UNESCO or if the government's going to ask him to shut things down, now is the time to take these teachings out from underneath the ground and to rewrite them, to build a library that would be very beautiful, that would become an attraction, and that he could actually have a small school for the monks. And so the story goes that my friend Kathy calls me and she said, Patricia, do you have any money? I said, what's wrong? I said, are you in trouble? And she goes, no, you're building a library. And I went, oh my gosh. So without even blinking, Keisha, I wrote and transferred $5,000 and we gave Master Kawan enough money to get everything started. And then of course that seed money was great because the local community then put money in and we were able to finish it. And it's a beautiful building. the wonderful part of synchronicity of life. In 2007, a couple of our friends were organizing a trip to China just before the Olympics. And they called us and said, would you like to go? And it was going to take place during the time of my birthday. So I convinced my husband this would be the best birthday present ever. And that we would go on this trip starting in Beijing, and we would go all the way down to Singapore, where I would take a flight to Cambodia, and I would go and visit and see the library and meet Master Kowon. And it all came together, and I did. And I spent 4 days, and when I walked through the jungle, through Angkor, and I saw the bullet holes in the walls of the buildings that were still existing, and I asked Master Kowon, you know, I mean, he doesn't speak English, so I had an interpreter. Where do they sleep? Where are the washrooms? Where are the showers? That did not exist. So I was devastated, and I came home, and fortunately, I do have some wonderful friends who said, okay, let's put this as a project and see what we can do. So over the course of 3 or 4 years, we completed a school for the children, a school for the monks. We rebuilt, you know, one of their innovation buildings. And then I've gone back several times. So my heart has been in Cambodia for a very, very long time. And also I was fortunate, and I say fortunate, that I was an advisor to Free the Children when Mark and Craig Kilbergers first started. Mm-hmm. And I had an opportunity to build a school in the Ola Green and the Masamari in Kenya. And I spent time helping others mm-hmm. to construct mindsets of servitude. Well, I fortunately met Serena Buffalino 3 years ago, and she has an amazing project that she started. She was teaching at-risk youth in Toronto. She was a teacher, and they were feeding the homeless, and they were on the subway where she was able to look up at the cameras. And it was during the time that they announced the Haiti earthquake had taken mm-hmm. place. And the children that were with her looked at her and said, you know, what's the problem? And she said, you know, you kids are complaining about being in school. These kids don't even have a school and will now not have a school. And they got back to their classroom, and the kids said, why don't we just build a school? So she started her project, which took a good 10 years. Mm-hmm. And then when we met, her school was finally finished. And then we helped raise money to sponsor the 100 mm-hmm. children that came to the school. And so for the last year, we've been working on sponsoring the children in Haiti, in Cité Soleil, which is the poorest of the wow. poorest areas. Mother Teresa has always said that this was the most difficult mile she had ever walked in her entire life. And so that's where we're at right now. We are trying to be mindful about feeding the homeless. We have outreach programs mm-hmm. in Toronto, and we've recently put a U.S. board together. So we're doing some projects with Feed It Forward. We're helping the YWCA here in Hamilton. There's quite a few organizations that we are trying to raise money to buy the food. And then wonderful chefs from various restaurants have come forward, and they are willing to do the cooking in their kitchens. And then we have volunteers that mm-hmm. actually go into the tents, into the outreach and the encampments, and we serve them. So life is interesting, and I still believe that, you know, there's only one thing that you can do with everything, and that is to understand that money might have power, but you have the power over the money. And mm-hmm. what you do with it is part of your transcendence.
I wanted to, that's so, so, so true. And something that I stated in the viral article that I wrote, which led to this book, Holistic Wealth 2, that, you know, your title at work doesn't go on your tombstone. I mean, all the riches in the world mean nothing if we're not using it for the good of humanity. And, you know, we recently set up a family foundation recently, Patricia, like we have to partner with you in some way because...
Oh, I want to talk.
I definitely want to talk. And I said in the back of my book, you know, that I would be launching a separate foundation in my husband's honor as well, too, because he was so big on charity. He built houses with Habitat for Humanity. He was a CGA, a CPA, and he did the taxes, you know, for Canadian senior citizens who couldn't afford it in tax time on a Saturday. Wow. Yeah, he'd go down and he'd do their taxes free. And I want to honor that wow. legacy. I really do. And with everything that's happened with the book and everything, I've done some, but I need to do more. And when I hear you, you've inspired me to do more. So I need to partner with you, because even recently we've been looking about how to help kids in Jamaica during COVID, because we have roots there. And, you know, some of those kids barely have internet access. They can't work online. Some of them don't have food. And so we've been scratching our heads too. And through this time, it's been challenging. And I think everybody is faced with that, you know, uncertainty. And sometimes you think, oh, I wonder what the future is going to look like. Are we ever going to come out of this in one piece? And so I just wanted to ask you about your thoughts on how you practice mindfulness and meditation daily, and how we can do that. You know, sometimes we feel ourselves slipping, you know, into this realm of the past or or worried about the future. And I just wanted to ask you how, in terms of the audience, how can they practice this on a daily basis?
The teachings that I began to embrace were originally, you know, to be in a state of prayer, a conversation with God, Jesus. And when you train your mind to be at peace, you have a focus, there's a clarity. And when I, back in the early 70s, the meditation, you know, the guru, the receiving your mantra, et cetera, was really a movement. And I started my practice in transcendental meditation back then. And when you begin to realize your mind has over all things, I still add and tackle that there is a piece of it which is karma, but the future is an echo of our past actions. So if we tackle meditation, which is a practice one should do every day, even if it's simple breathing exercises where we allow our mind and our body to come to a place where even for 5 minutes a day, you have balance, where you can sit quietly. I'm sitting alone by yourself is the hardest thing. It's so much easier, like, to have a conversation with you. I want to talk to you for like 100 hours nonstop. And then I realized that if I was sitting here by myself, 100 hours is a long time. And yet our minds are stimulated too often. And to find a way of coping, if we can simply be kind to ourselves and recognize it's great to be friends with yourself. It is an amazing opportunity to find a piece of yourself that is really, like, you're a really cool person and like yourself. And then through, you know, not the egoic sense, but just simply being in balance with yourself, with the qualities, with, you know, you talk about the holistic approach. I mean, nowadays, because of the benefits of the internet, we can find out everything from the human genome to DNA. There are companies right now that are actually able to tell you what your gut should be having, like how your gut is processing. And, you know, 1, 2, 3 DNA, all of those things are in front of us. We have to look at how do you live at the highest and best that you can. And it isn't always about having enough money. I can't afford to do those things. I think we are all resourceful people and we can find ways. But I think the first part of anyone's practice is to choose to be on a path, whether you believe in a God or not. I strongly feel that by having an understanding of clarity in your own mind, you can find patience, you can learn generosity, you can have compassion and begin to solve some of the issues that perhaps you only know that they're issues, but truly are they? So questioning the who, what, where, when, and why, and finding out why, like, what is your purpose? Simon Sinek, like, there are so many opportunities for people to just stretch their mind and to reevaluate. So just find the confidence in yourself to sit quietly and just try.
Yeah, no, those are wise words. And definitely it's worth the effort for the payback in terms of self-awareness and how we can grow and learn during that time. So Patricia, just wondering if you could tell our audience where to find you on social media, your website, so they can look you up.
Oh, thank you. So www.patriciakarengagich. So patriciakarengagich.com. It's funny. I know I should do more social media, and that's probably something that will happen in the near future, but I definitely am on Facebook as well. So,
okay, great. And again, it was so good having you here and hearing about your journey and, you know, transformation and all of that. It was so good. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for joining us this week on Holistic Wealth with Keisha Blair. Make sure to visit our website, keishablair.com, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or via RSS so you will never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes, or if you simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out too. Are you a member of the Institute on Holistic Wealth? If not, what are you waiting for? Go to instituteonholisticwealth.com/memberships to choose your membership plan and join. As a member, you get so many perks. Free worksheets, advice, coaching, and a member's workshop to design an intentionally designed life. You need to figure out your life purpose? Take the Build Your Life Purpose Portfolio online self-paced course. You're struggling with all your money decisions? Take the free financial identities quiz and then take the course. You recently had a breakup, job loss, or experienced the death of a loved one? Take the holistic healing course. You need an overall plan to achieve holistic wealth? We will help you figure out your holistic wealth blueprint. And of course, if you want to start making money by helping others achieve holistic wealth, become a certified holistic wealth consultant. Regardless of what career you've got, the Institute will show you how to increase your income and walk in your purpose. The sooner you join, the sooner you start to achieve a more holistically wealthy lifestyle. And you're going to want to stay for a very long time. So go to instituteonholisticwealth.com/memberships to join. If you haven't read the book yet, pick up a copy of the award-winning, best-selling Holistic Wealth, 32 Life Lessons to Help You Find Purpose, Prosperity, and Happiness.